Welcome to H2 Tech Talk, the web's most sustainable podcast and your premier destination for expert insights into the global hydrogen sector. Dive into our informative series as we explore the latest advancements, news, and trends in the realm of sustainable energy. H2 Tech is a leading source of up-to-date, compelling discussions around hydrogen technology. Don't forget to subscribe and share to stay connected with the world of hydrogen innovation and sustainable solutions. Now, here's this week's episode.
Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of H2 Tech Talk. Today, we are live at CERAWeek once again. This time, we have Chad Mason, the CEO of Advanced Ionics. How are you doing today, Chad?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Thanks for joining us. So I'm not super familiar with Advanced Ionics. So how about you give, for my benefit and the listeners, a background on the company and your role as a CEO?
Yeah. So we're a 26-person company based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a few staff members elsewhere, such as in Houston. And we're developing water vapor electrolysis, which is a type of electrolyzer technology that operates at intermediate temperatures. So for those folks versed in, you know, the electrolysis industry and what's out there, it's really the OPEX advantages of solid oxide technology with the CAPEX advantages of at-scale liquid water electrolysis. I mean, we're there to really support the decarbonization of heavy industry. So all of the places that hydrogen is used today, gray hydrogen that needs to be decarbonized, ammonia, petrochemicals leading into green chemicals, green materials, green steel, things like that.
Excellent. And what kind of got you to this role as CEO? What's some of your background?
So I grew up on a family farm in central North Dakota, and you know, I used to put down anhydrous ammonia in the field. And so at an early age, I understood the necessity of hydrogen in all of the things that we utilize, both on the farm and in society in general. And so that led me down this path of working in clean tech, and I've spent time both on hydrogen technology side, such as fuel cells, and also on lithium and sodium ion batteries. And then it was interesting because I had spent a lot of time when I was a kid studying electrolysis, even building a few electrolyzers to run things like lawnmowers, albeit mostly unsuccessfully. And so when I came back and looked at electrolysis, and I was quite surprised that there were no new approaches. It was really taking what was already being done in the fuel cell space and adapting it for electrolysis, and that's not really the right approach. And so what we did was decide to build a new type of electrolyzer specifically suited for industrial users, and we're really building it from the ground up. And with that in mind, we've done that with supply chain sustainability, scalability in mind, and ease of use for industrial customers at the heart of it, you know, combined with the obvious need for low OPEX, meaning less electricity use than traditional liquid water electrolysis.
Okay, so you seem passionate about electrolysis.
Yep.
So what is the state, as you see it, of the electrolysis and hydrogen market?
You know, it's a good market in that we're all in this together to help scale up and decarbonize hydrogen as it exists today. And so it is nice being part of that overall community. But we really wanted to take an approach that got to the heart of the problem, which was lower the amount of electricity needed in electrolysis and design a type of system that can really become the replacement for how it's done today. And how it's done today is cracking methane through steam methane reformation on site, and that hydrogen's immediately utilized by the chemical processes, such as hydrocracking or ammonia production. So for us, it's really designing something that does it with green hydrogen, but in the same way that engineers at large chemical companies already know how to work with. So that's the approach we take at our company.
Gotcha. And can you tell me about this? I'm super curious. What is this water vapor-based electrolyzer?
And yeah.
How does it differ from alkaline PEM?
Yeah, so with the solid oxide technology on the top end, it usually runs above 600, usually above 700 degrees Celsius, so high temperature steam. And that creates complexities in the balance of plant itself, how much insulation heat tracing you need to do, and also the ability to scale up the technology from a stack size point of view. And then on the low temperature end, you have a plethora of different technologies such as alkaline, PEM, AEM, and a variety of other approaches as well. So it's important to be operating at a point where you're above liquid water because you've already overcome the heat of vaporization of water. And that's the biggest energy penalty that you can really address. It's kind of your low-hanging fruit, per se. But we do that in a way that's much more elegant and simple than solid oxide electrolysis. So basically, our stack technology operates in, you know, roughly around 300 degrees Celsius. And so that means that, you know, we can utilize that heat that is available at industrial facilities, even low-temperature waste heat, but also be able to offer those OPEX advantages of solid oxide electrolysis. So, you know, 35 kilowatt hours per kilogram at the stack level. And that's about a 20 to 30% electricity savings over doing liquid water electrolysis. So that's a big advantage for us and for the customer that would buy our product.
What are you calling it?
The technology itself?
Yeah.
We call it Symbion. And really that comes from the nature of it being symbiotic with the industrial processes that utilize the hydrogen. So, yeah.
All right. Clever. Yeah. So can you speak more to, you said it offers the operational expenditures of a solid oxide.
Yeah. Yep.
But the CapEx of,
you know, I guess, alkaline, yeah.
So do you want to speak a little bit more to that? And I guess your view on how important controlling these costs are?
Yeah, so OPEX, roughly speaking, is about 75% of the total cost of hydrogen. CapEx, roughly 15%. And then other costs, you know, O&M maintenance costs, things like that, make up the rest of the pie. So you do have to take an OPEX first approach. A lot of folks talk about CapEx all the time. And while that shouldn't be ignored, especially things like supply chain and critical minerals, you know, OPEX is what matters. How we address the CapEx side of it is we wanted to make sure we were starting with raw materials that were abundant and there were much less geopolitical constraints. So we utilize pretty standard nickel-based catalysts, and then the rest of the cell hardware is, you know, standard-grade stainless steel components, balance of plant, mostly stainless steel components, a lot of off-the-shelf materials that are already produced at scale. I mean, the way we're working on the balance of plant as well is really making it such that it's as plug and play for an industry that generally doesn't work with plug and play. So we're working to make that as frictionless as possible from a customer point of view.
So no platinum, no iridium,
correct?
Nothing like that?
Correct.
All right, good. Yeah, that's a good way to keep costs low.
Oh, yeah.
So why in general do you think green hydrogen development is so critical for our net zero goals?
So there's obviously a lot of hype about hydrogen. I think the hype has died down. And in that, when we talk about hydrogen, we're talking about it as a feedstock, a chemical feedstock. We're not talking about it as an energy carrier. In the sense that for many of the things that we take for granted in today's society, like ammonia or plastics or other materials, hydrogen is a necessity to make them. You must have the proton and sometimes the electron from the hydrogen molecule to make whatever else you're trying to make, such as the ammonia molecule or the hydrocarbon or whatever that may be. So it's very important that we move to decarbonized feedstock, not just of hydrogen, but obviously a lot of other things in society as well. So that's what we're here to do.
And you said that, you know, y'all work with green petrochemicals and things like that as well?
Yeah. You know, our goal is to see, you know, of course, there's kind of the low-hanging fruit of using less of certain things and using things more efficiently. That's always what you want to do first. And there's nice analogies to how you think about your own house. When you make your house more energy efficient or net zero, you do the same thing. Insulate it and then switch to heat pumps and solar, things like that. And it's really analogous in the industrial sense as well, of use things more efficiently. But for the things you still need to produce, you want to make sure you're decarbonizing those feedstocks.
What are your thoughts on the IRA and 45V? Does it work? And if so, if you think so, why?
Well, we'll see what the final guidance is on it. We were optimistic, and we've put out some commentary on social media about our views on it over Christmas last year. It's definitely the right approach as far as the correlation, regionality, additionality. The one concerns, I think, myself and, you know, other people in our industry have is how do you deal with things like existing hydro? There needs to be a place for those clean energy sources as far as feeding electrolyzers. So I would expect that they're going to find a way to make sure that those resources can be utilized and still harvest the tax credits when final guidance comes out. But, you know, we'll see.
I guess they said there's still up for discussion because, yeah. I mean, like we were even talking about methane pyrolysis earlier, that's not something that's mentioned at all.
Yeah, I think that's a very important technology as well. Of course, we don't work in that area, but I have friends that do, and I think there needs to be some certainty around methane pyrolysis and other approaches as well. So
you're backed by BP.
Yep, they're one of our investors. They led our A round. I mean, we have a great group of other investors as well.
Well, I won't ask you to name drop any, but how did that come about? I mean, it must be to be backed by a company like BP.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, they must have faith in your product.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an obvious sell to them, even though we're an early stage startup. Our approach makes sense to people who understand chemical processing and making materials that, you know, are necessary for the world economy. And so we're really excited to have them backing us and partners with us on everything we're doing.
So what's next for Advanced Ionics?
Yeah, the usual processes, continuing to scale up, demonstrate reliability, durability, which everyone wants to see, of course. And we'll have some additional announcements in the coming year here on some pretty exciting small pilot projects and then working our way up to larger projects.
What do you think and hope this technology will be in 5 years?
5 years, basically moving towards commercial scale at that point in time with our large, what we kind of internally call our Apollo generation stack. And that's really of the same size that you can buy a large alkaline system today. So that's where you need to be as far as in making sure you're able to produce the amount of hydrogen required and the footprint required. I mean, also to keep CapEx low, even though it's not a primary requirement, you still want to be sensitive to that, especially, you know, from a gross margin point of view. So in 5 years, I think we'll have some of our first Apollo units heading out to our partners and customers.
Excellent. All right. So before I let you go, Chad, do you have any final thoughts, takeaways?
Nothing too major. I mean, I just want to reemphasize, or I guess I don't know if we talked about it at all, but, you know, we're based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it's really great to be building a company like this in the heart of the Midwest, a place that, you know, has seen manufacturing leave. It's not known for a lot of clean tech either. And so I think we're part of a really great community of companies and startups that are building technology in the Midwest and supporting local jobs there and great careers and a great place to live as well. So,
all right. Well, thank you again, Chad, for joining us and taking some time out of the CERAWeek schedule.
Yeah, same to you, Tyler. Yeah, thanks for talking to me. Really appreciate it.
Of course, anytime. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another episode. Please remember to share and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to subscribe and share to stay connected with the world of hydrogen innovation and sustainable solutions. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to Tyler.Campbell@gulfenergyinfo.com.